Well, with the playing of that familiar theme song, it's time to go out to the other coast of the United States and talk to our old friend, Michael Snyder. How you doing, Michael?
I'm okay, Alex. I hope you're doing well, and hello to everybody out there listening or watching GabNet. Great to be on board and ready to rock with some new movies, shall we go?
Go right ahead.
Okay. Now, it's in select theaters this weekend, you know, New York and L.A. and the upper tier, but I'm going to lead with Power Ballad since it's one of my favorite movies of the year so far. Now, it's flawed and it's a little superficial, but it's got the inescapable good guy charm of Paul Rudd on its side, and it does get some things right about the entertainment field. Plus, it doesn't wrap up quite how you might expect a cheerful movie about a musical bromance gone sour to go. Anyway, another thing in Power Ballad's favor is that it was directed and co-written by Irish musician-turned-filmmaker John Carney, who has never failed to delight me with his tuneful movies, including the Oscar winner Once. He did the contemporary singer-songwriter story Begin Again with Keira Knightley and Mark Ruffalo, the 1980s coming-of-age rom-com Sing Street. I mean, he's made lovely, lovely movies. And with Power Ballad, Carney is working with Rudd and ex-boy band heartthrob Nick Jonas in a cautionary tale about the creative process, IP ownership, and the cruelties of the music business, especially the business part of it. So Rudd plays Rick, an almost over-the-hill rocker whose recording career never panned out. He met someone while on tour in Ireland, fell in love with her, married, and had a daughter. Years later, he lives with his wife and now teenage daughter in a modest house in Dublin, Ireland, and makes a living as a singer in a wedding band. So while playing a posh wedding, Rick learns that one of the guests is former boy band star Danny, played by Jonas, of course. One thing leads to another, that being a drunken songwriting session where Rick plays one of his unrecorded numbers for Danny. They part company, and some time elapses. Danny subsequently elevates this previously shaky solo career he's been dealing with by using the song that Rick wrote, a little tweaked, but takes credit for it. And, you know, Rick spirals at the news, especially when Danny's manager, played by Carney favorite Jack Rayner, essentially tells Rick to take a hike. Now, if you know anything about pop music history, you know this is something that has happened time and again, and I myself have experienced a variation of this that I won't get into. You know, the people responsible shall remain anonymous. Meanwhile, the performances in Power Ballad, including Rudd's singing, are quite good, as is the hit song in question, which was co-written by Carney and Scottish musician Gary Clark. I really loved Power Ballad. You know, it's in my sweet spot, and I recommend it. Again, it is in select theaters this weekend. I don't know if you enjoyed Carney's previous movies, Alex, but if you did, I recommend you check out Power Ballad. Okay, let's move on. Pressure is a World War II drama about the events leading up to the Allied forces' assault on the beaches of Normandy, France, that turned the tide against the Nazis. Remember when the Nazis were the bad guys? Boy, those were the good old days. I don't know. Anyway, we've been here before, and we've been here before regarding D-Day movies, and The Longest Day comes to mind, probably one of the greatest and most spectacular pre-computer effects war movies in cinematic history. So what's different with Pressure? Well, Pressure looks at the decision-making at Allied headquarters in England regarding the military offensive when bad weather threatened to wash D-Day out. And that means there are heated powwows depicted between American General Dwight D. Ike Eisenhower and British Captain James Stagg, who apparently was a Tweedy meteorologist who is certain that a storm's a-coming. So, you know, maybe they got to cancel D-Day. Pressure is not so much The Longest Day as it is The Longest Weather Report. I mean, to its credit, it does feature the always compelling Andrew Scott as Captain Stagg, the talented Chris Messina as his skeptical American counterpart on the Allied Weather Watch, and the versatile Kerry Condon as Ike's British personal secretary and purported paramour, Kay Summersby. Oddly enough, I did not buy one of my favorite actors, Brendan Fraser, as Eisenhower. It's not that he's bad. He's just not Ike. He's way more George of the Jungle, you know, to be honest. And it's not that pressure is bad. I mean, its heart is in the right place, and it's focusing on an aspect of the D-Day story that is not familiar, and it held my attention. Someone did their research, probably director, co-screenwriter Anthony Maris, but for a movie concerned with potentially devastating rainfall, it can get pretty dry. I guess there's only so much excitement to be found with squabbling weathermen in uniform. I give pressure a partially hazy forecast with a few welcome moments of clarity. It is in theaters. Okay, let's move on to a movie that I kind of was excited about, you know, when I caught it the last minute. It's called Back Rooms. For the uninitiated, the phrase creepypasta, I almost said crispy pasta, but anyway, creepypasta refers to a type of horrific paranormal internet story that's delivered or told online as if it's true. So it's been around since the digital age came to fruition. The myth of the Slender Man is one example. So, developed from director Kane Parsons' Creepypasta web series with a script by Will Sudik, Backrooms is a disturbing and seriously surreal amalgam of horror and science fiction with an infusion of psychodrama as failing furniture store owner Clark finds a portal in the basement of his Santa Clara showroom that leads to a massive maze-like series of connecting rooms with all sorts of detritus, some of which looks like it was teleported into the walls, ceilings, and floors. As the store owner tries to figure out what and where he stumbled into, there's also the possibility that someone or something is down there with him. If Clark is caught up in this 1990s set mystery, who's minding the store, and what's going to happen when he misses an appointment with his therapist? Okay, in addition to being this wildly trippy movie with impactful, sometimes subtle special effects, it greatly benefits from Oscar-level actors in main roles with Chiwetel Ejiofor from 12 Years a Slave and Eleanor the Great and Children of Men as store owner Clark, and Renata Rensvi from Sentimental Value and The Worst Person in the World as his therapist Mary. Plus, you get actor and acclaimed indie filmmaker Mark Duplass in a small but significant part. And speaking of filmmakers, noted genre directors James Wan, Sean Levy, and Oz Perkins are among the producers of Back Rooms. They obviously bought into Parsons' freaky nightmare vision, and so did I. Back Rooms is in theaters, and you can see it starting this weekend. And man, I left there a little rattled, to be quite honest with you. Let's see here. Oh, we got to talk about The Mandalorian and Grogu. It's the latest movie in the gazillion-dollar Star Wars science fiction franchise, and the first film in a while to be set, how do we put this, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. In fact, it's a continuation of the recent and well-loved Star Wars TV series, The Mandalorian, starring Pedro Pascal and a couple stunt actors as Din Djarin, a noble mercenary in indestructible armor who ends up adopting a baby from the same race of the sage, telepathic Yoda character that we know so well from the other Star Wars movies. In that, this is very much like Japan's lone wolf and cub samurai stories, only with the galactic twist, because you have this, you know, mercenary traveling around with a baby, essentially. So in the wake of three seasons of The Mandalorian, we find Mando and Grogu working for the Rebel Alliance after the fall of the Empire. An officer of the Alliance, played by Sigourney Weaver, sends our heroic duo to speak with the twin siblings of the late Jabba the Hutt to learn the whereabouts of one Imperial warlord who got away from the rebels and is plotting to return to power. But Mando learns that the twins have banished Rada the Hutt, Jabba's son and heir, and thus he's tasked with rescuing Radha from the missing warlord. The stakes don't feel high, but this is technically dazzling, upbeat fun for the whole family. The action on the IMAX screen, which is how I saw the movie, pretty thrilling. And Grogu is so cute, he'll even grow on cynics, I think. You know, you got your junk food, product, merch bait, fan service vibe. It's a standalone, but more impactful for people familiar with the characters and their journey from the three seasons of the TV series that, I'll be honest, has yet to top the quality and thrills of season one. But I enjoyed The Mandalorian and Grogu. It's in theaters, some IMAX, some regular, I assume. And it's kind of cool. They have Jeremy Allen White from The Bear voicing Radha the Hutt, in addition to, you know, having Pascal and the rest involved.
Yeah, by the way, just so people know, the overall reviews of this film are terrible.
Well, they've been on the negative side, but there have been those like me that enjoyed it for what it is. But, you know, I guess people don't like the idea of a TV series blown up, you know, it's as if they took what they were going to do for series four and kind of turned it into a movie. And, you know, I can understand people's complaints about that. But in terms of just the entertainment factor, I thought it was good, you know? Okay, that's for me. While it first appears to be kind of a manic farce about a group of female shoplifters plundering retail stores and creating havoc from the East Bay to San Francisco in Northern California, I Love Boosters turns out to be that and a lot more. It's Boots Riley's follow-up to his fresh, fearless 2018 screenwriting and directing debut, Sorry to Bother You, which was an absurdist comedy about a black telemarketer who uses kind of a white voice to be more successful at his job. And I Love Boosters shares similar DNA, marshaling a parade of comic scenes that kind of lean into racial disparity and class conflict for laughs, and then suddenly jump headlong into unexpected science fiction concepts. So in case you don't know, a booster is a shoplifter on a mission to steal merchandise and resell it for profit. And that's not quite the aim of the Velvet Gang, a trio of ambitious, community-minded Bay Area thieves on the make in I Love Boosters. You got a wannabe clothing designer, Corvette, played by Kiki Palmer. She's the ringleader of this larcenous threesome, which includes Mariah, played by Taylor Page, and Sade, played by Naomi Ackie. They spend their time boosting clothes from the Metro Design off-the-rack clothing chain owned by a ruthless fashionista named Christy Smith and played, believe it or not, by, and I was kind of delighted with this, played by Demi Moore, and she does a great job playing this a-hole fashion designer. And the boosters are selling the stolen goods at bargain prices to friends and neighbors. When Christy realizes that this is happening, she declares war against the Velvet Gang. And meanwhile, Corvette of the gang wants revenge on Christy because she's ripped off some of Corvette's designs. So things get crazy and crazier as I Love Boosters hurdles to a climax with the two different competing groups going up against one another. Palmer and the actresses playing her comrades are having a blast, I think. And Demi Moore, again, is pretty good, man. She's rocking it still. There are other familiar names on hand in relatively small, significant roles. Lakeith Stanfield, Stanfield plays a demonic love interest for Corvette. Will Poulter is a fussy Metro Design store manager. Isaac Gonzalez is a labor organizer. And an almost unrecognizable Don Cheadle plays a glib pyramid scheme promoter. It's kind of cluttered. It has a few frustrating leaps of logic and isn't quite as funny, I think, as intended. But I Love Boosters tries to elevate while entertaining and has kind of a jolly time fleeing the fashion industry. Colorful, exuberant. I kind of liked it. It's called I Love Boosters. I didn't love the movie, but I liked it a lot. And let's wrap things up with a movie called Tuner, which is also about crime and thievery. It's The latest movie from director co-screenwriter Daniel Rohr, and this is the guy that won an Academy Award for the 2022 documentary Navalny about the Russian politician Navalny, and also co-directed and appeared in the AI doc, which I thought was really good, all about the rise of artificial intelligence. Tuner is an entirely different undertaking. It's a drama that intertwines a caper movie and a romance, and it's spiced up with a touch of humor. So Rohrer has this thing well in hand, and it's aided by a very effective lead performance by Leo Woodall as Nicky White, a young man forced to abandon a career as a concert pianist because of his super acute hearing. I mean, the pain he feels when exposed to normal levels of noise requires adjustable earplugs, but he has perfect pitch, which allows him to work as a piano tuner under aging boss Harry Horowitz, an old school curmudgeon brought to life by the venerable Dustin Hoffman. Nicky is slated to take over the business when Harry retires. In the meantime, they tune pianos in the New York City metropolitan area, which allows them to meet a wide variety of people. One of them is a talented composition student, Ruthie, played by Havana Rose Liu, and she could be a girlfriend for Nicky under the right circumstances. But a less pleasant encounter brings Nicky in contact with a band of thieves whose promise of easy money convinces him to help them break into safes because he has that amazing hearing. And of course, once they pull him in, it's not that simple to get out. I thought this was a lovely film, really well made. Enhancing a tuner are two canny vets, including Tova Feldshuh as Harry's stalwart wife and Jean Reno as Ruthie's mentor. And as you would hope in a movie about hearing and music, the sound design used to approximate Nicky's disability and the way he hears the world around him is excellent and immersive. And the score, mixing jazz and classical music, is lovely. I would say tune into Tuner and enjoy it. It's in select theaters. What have you been watching, Mr. Bennett?
Well, we watched a really, I think, a good series. It's 8 episodes. It's on Netflix, and it's called The Burrows.
I have not checked this out. Give me a little more detail.
Well, we've got, what's his name, the guy that was in Raiders of the Lost Ark, oddly enough, playing the guy who says, I'll throw you the whippy, throw me the idol. You know.
John Rhys Davies?
No.
I don't know who that would be.
He plays
actually
the guy who takes him to the cave, walks into the cave with him, gets all the tarantulas on his back.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry, I don't remember the actor's name, but that's fine. What's the basic premise of this thing?
The premise is that a bunch of people live in this retirement community. And there's some mystery going on. I'm not going to even begin to tell you what it is. But it's basically nothing but old actors, which is wonderful to see. I mean, I'm partial to that now that I'm really old. Yeah. And then I think it's a good little show with a lot of heart and a lot of mystery going on behind it. And
Wait, I remember who you're talking about. You're talking about Alfred Molina, the guy who played
Dr. Molina.
Octopus in the Spider-Man movies.
Yeah. He's the star of it, but it has a bunch of old actors that are really, really good. So I suggest The Burrows. I think people will enjoy it. Maybe if you're young, you won't enjoy it because you go, what are all these old people doing here? You know.
Hang on. It's on Netflix, right?
Yeah.
And you know what? Now I remember Gina Davis is in this. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
She's an old actor now?
Well, she's older. She doesn't play. Yeah. She doesn't play as old as the rest of them. Okay, she's there for other reasons. But it's just a really good series. We enjoyed it. And
all right, that sounds cool.
Also on Netflix is a docudrama, you know, where they mix real footage with actors. And usually I don't like that, but this one is spectacular. It's called FDR, and it's all about Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And it has made us aware of a lot of stuff we didn't know about what was going on during his presidency. And it's an amazing documentary, and I suggest that if people like documentaries. I'm not I don't fall in love with what I call docudramas, but this thing really does it well, you know, and is unapologetic about the fact that for certain things they have to use actors, you know. So, anyway, FDR.
So, are you telling me we have nothing to fear but Netflix itself?
That's right. And then we go to something you recommended that I go back to because we watched half an episode and it didn't grab us. And that was Rivals. And we watched everything. Rivals is, and still in its second season. But Rivals is very good. You were right on that one for a change.
Oh, please. It's delightful. David Tennant plays kind of against type. He oftentimes plays a hero or a romantic lead.
Well, no, he's played a serial killer, too. You know,
well, that's true. Yeah. No, you're right. He's a great. He played the Purple Man in the Jessica Jones Marvel series. He's a real bastard. But this guy is the head. He's like he married into the aristocracy and he's the head of a regional television channel that gets in competition for another regional television channel. And his arch enemy is one of the figureheads of that. And there's bed hopping. I thoroughly loved it. And
serial. It's a great a soap opera.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's very soap operatic, but yeah. It's whimsical. And since it's set in the, and there's a lot of great new wave rock music on the soundtrack. And the girl who plays the youngest daughter of the Irish TV presenter that becomes important in the mix. I'd never seen her before, and she's just fabulous. I totally loved it. Quick note before we sign off. I want to mention Spider-Noir on Prime Video because, you know me, I love superhero stuff. And I think Nicolas Cage always wanted to play a superhero. He couldn't get to play Superman in that abortive attempt to make a Superman movie starring him. And here he plays a Spider-Man Noir, a.k.a. the Spider, in a super stylish alternate universe version of Spider-Man. And it's set in kind of a film noir style 1930s New York City, populated with versions of a supporting cast and a few newbies. And the Spider is kind of a grizzled, gun-toting, older private eye, making Cage kind of age-appropriate in the role. And he has all the usual powers, but he's kind of given them up until he's forced back into superheroic action by strange villains. It's 8 episodes. You can watch it in color or in black and white. And I think purists might prefer the latter. And I really enjoyed Spider-Noir. I'm halfway through it and gobbling it up. And you know, Cage is, you know, sinks his teeth into this thing, you know.
Okay. All right. Enough. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you can check it out.
Okay. That's it. Tell them where they can find you, Michael.
You can check me out on Twitter at Culture Blaster. And at thevoicesf.org, writing various articles, and on Facebook, where you can click onto Alex and I talking as we're talking right now.
Okay.
And you're on Gabnet.
And there's more Gabnet coming right up, so everybody stay around.